Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program, not to mention the only person that travels nationwide, offering and spreading the chicken love about raising backyard poultry the right way the first time without having to reinvent the wheel, my friends. I'll be on the road very soon with Tractor Supply, again in June. Today happens to be Wednesday, April 17th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including, of course, backyard poultry, show poultry, for you fanciers out there, heritage poultry, for you homesteaders, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, please, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter. We're approaching 6,000 followers on Twitter, and you can become a fan on Facebook, teetering around 70,000, more than any other chicken-related Facebook page on the planet. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We got a great show lined up for you today. It is Garden Wise Living with Arlena, and we have a special guest today, so we'll get to that here in just a few minutes. Want to first remind you again about the chicken coop contest we have going on right now for the month of April. Every single day for the month of April, I'm posting a secret password on our Facebook page, which is then automatically posted on our Twitter page. Every day, 30 days in April, there will be 30 passwords, okay? Every day. So look for it. Collect those passwords, people. And then, a little later in the month, we're going to tell you what to do with those passwords and how to have a chance to win that awesome chicken coop from mypetchicken.com. This is awesome. It is a brand new coop. Nobody's even seen it. It's not even out on the market yet. This is awesome, and it is exciting, and you'll have a chance to win this coop before anybody else on the planet. So we're looking forward to that. Collect those secret passwords. Also, this time for this contest, we give so many away. This contest, there is a secret message embedded in the secret password. So have you started to try to figure that one out yet? See if you can. There may be additional prizes for you if you can figure that out. So hopefully you're participating in the Password Collection for Poultry Protection Chicken Coop Contest here in April. Also, we're hitting the road again tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to welcome poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, Ph.D., and she's going to be joining us tomorrow, and I'll post the topic for tomorrow's show a little later on, maybe when I post the secret password today. But then after that, we are hitting the road. We're heading down to Mobile. Last week, we were in northern Alabama, in Moulton, for the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. Tomorrow, we're heading south down to Mobile. I've been invited down there to speak to the Mobile Master Gardeners and Book Club. So we're definitely looking forward to that. It is Saturday. I think there's just a few seats left. There's two speakers. You'll be in a morning classroom and an afternoon classroom, and then you'll swap. You'll get to see both speakers for the day. Box lunches provided. I think it's $28. I have nothing to do with that. I've just been invited down to speak. And so you can probably Google that, Chicken Whisperer Mobile, Alabama, Chicken Whisperer Mobile, Alabama, Master Gardeners, and find out all the information, register, again, box lunch is provided. If you like to eat boxes, well, then you're going to want to make it, because there's a box lunch provided on Saturday during our big event there. So how cool is that? I'll have plenty of books there to autograph and sign, The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and I'll have a few T-shirts to sell. I'm out of large, but I think I have every other size. We're out of large up there at Moulton for the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. Completely ran out of large. So we've got some others. So other sizes, including new sizes. So hopefully we'll see you this
coming Saturday in Mobile. But if I don't see you there, don't fret. We're getting ready and in actively planning our next tour with Tractor Supply, which is going to take us through the Carolinas. And that's going to be sometime in mid-June. Also, remember that next week, no radio shows. It is my week off to spend with the family, so no radio shows next week. But we will be posting once a day the secret password for the coop contest. All righty. Hey, let me give you some news here for our Chickens in the News segment. And unfortunately, there has been yet another unnecessary chicken coop fire caused by yet another unnecessary heat lamp in the coop. Okay, it's March. Now, I know there's some cold fronts still moving through. I think Denver yesterday got something like 18 inches of snow. So you know, I can't say, well, hey, folks, it's April. What are you thinking? Just because it's 80 here doesn't mean it's 80 everywhere. Okay? This comes to us from the Amherst Patch. Smith Road fire reaches the house. I've told you that happens before. You didn't believe me. I've told you in the past how many times do these coop fires, the fire ends up reaching the people's home. Smith Road fire reaches the house, destroys chicken coop. No injuries were reported in Tuesday morning's blaze. A two-alarm fire spread from a backyard chicken coop into the nearby home Tuesday morning. Okay. These are tax dollars that could be spent more wise instead of having to put your chicken coop fire out because you were irresponsible and had an unnecessary heat lamp in there. Okay, I'm off my rant. Amherst Fire Chief Mark Boynton said that the fire on 1 Smith Road was called in about 3:40 a.m. this morning. The cause is still under investigation, but it is likely that a heat lamp in the chicken coop started the fire.
Boo.
The blaze spread to two rooms in the house. Not the chicken coop, but the people's dwelling, occupied dwelling. Bedroom, kitchen, dining room, living room. And then the fire spread to the first and second story of the house. It had completely destroyed the chicken coop, but much of the house was spared from damage, thanks to the great firemen that got there in a timely manner, I'm sure. No injuries were reported. Amherst Fire was joined by Brookline, Hollis, Milford, Mount Vernon, and Wilton. Good heavens, how many... Boynton said that their quick, effective response kept the fire under control and contained it in time. The guys did an awesome job, he said. It was a good save. So the fire department saved more than just the chimney this time, folks. But still, it was caused by an unnecessary heat lamp in the coop. Okay. Some of the comments we have over here on our Facebook page since I posted this. The first one may be a new follower on Facebook and hasn't seen our multitude of past posts about unnecessary heat lamps in coops over the last 5 years or longer. Trina asks, so what temperature is it necessary to heat a chicken coop? My answer, never. I hate the word never. I guess there's always an exception if you have a really cruddy chicken coop and it gets down to negative 50. But maybe if you have a cruddy chicken coop and it gets down to negative 50, maybe. This gentleman says, or young lady, I can't tell, their name is in a different language. I almost lost my entire coop and stock of birds over 2 years ago to a stupid heat lamp. The light bulb came separated from the lamp and caught fire. Okay. Experience, folks. Judy says, Trina, you don't need to heat a chicken coop. They're wearing those cute down jackets as long as there is clean water and a dry place to roost where their little feet aren't exposed all night. It's warm enough. For the former, if it gets really cold, invest in a heated drinker. For the latter, install a 2-inch wide board or limb in the coop. And then I had to sound off. Chickens have been domesticated for about 6,000 years. We've only had electricity in America for the past 125 years. The chickens obviously have done just fine the past 5,875 years without a heat in the coop. Okay. Let's see. Someone said, Rachel says, that's very sad. However, a lot of us have chicks right now. And up here in the north, it is necessary to have heat for them, at least for a little bit. And I put, baby chicks raised without a broody mama is completely different.
except for the fact that I do report on house fires every year from heat lamps and brooders. The difference? Needed versus not needed. Okay, adult chickens anywhere in America, no heat in the winter, thank you. But yes, baby chicks without a broody mama need that supplemental heat source. But there are safer things to use than a $10 heat lamp. There's the Sweeter Heaters. There's the from SweeterHeater.com. There's the EcoGlow Brooder Heaters from Brincy.com. Yes, they're $70, $80, $100 instead of $10 for a heat lamp, dangerous heat lamp. But I wonder what your insurance deductible is. More than $80, I'm sure. So get one of those safe heating devices. Okay? Let's see what else we have here. Louise says heat lamps are sometimes necessary. Wrong! Okay? What would your alternatives be? And, of course, the SweeterHeater.com for the coop. Okay? Sweeter Heater. It doesn't heat the coop. It heats the chickens. You can mount it above the roost or behind the roost if you feel like you have to do that. Okay? Have to do that. I live in Northeast Pennsylvania. It gets so cold here, and I've never used a heat lamp for the girls. Okay, and then of course Louise saying, "Hey, we live in Quebec. It gets sometimes -22 to -30. That's fine. We'll have about 15 people post that it gets down to -30, and they never use the heat lamp. Never have, and their chickens are fine." Let's see what else we got here. Here's somebody in Alberta. My chickens are in an unheated but insulated garage. Winter temps regularly go down to -30. I've never used a heat lamp. See, so thank you very much for posting on our Facebook page. But again, I wanted to let everybody know and read that chickens in the news segment about more unnecessary heat lamps. Also, I'm going to let you know this, okay? I have forwarded this information to my sponsor, Tractor Supply, because I know they sell this particular heat lamp bulb. Now, it's too early for accusations. It's too early to do a recall. I'm just doing my part and educating you guys and letting you know this. It was sent to me earlier in the week. I forwarded it to Tractor Supply. It's been forwarded to their buyers to research this and investigate this. But apparently, the bulbs that are sold in a lot of places, not just Tractor Supply, but other places as well, possibly a particular brand. I don't have it right off the top of my head. Just be aware of this. If it comes to where we need to make an official recall or announcement, we will, naming the brand and things. But apparently the bulb itself, the glass part of the bulb, has become separated from the small, I don't know if it's metal or aluminum or what have you, piece that screws into the brooder lamp itself. And then falls, and there's only two wires that are dangling this bulb. The glass part of the bulb, again, comes separated from the metal part of the bulb that screws into the lamp, the heat lamp itself. And so people have caught the bulb dangling there. Apparently, the bulb gets so hot that it, I guess, melts the glue that secures the metal screw-in part, the threaded part, to the bulb. And so the bulb's gotten so hot that it may melt that glue, or maybe it heats the bulb to where it expands or doesn't expand. I'm not a scientist. And then the bulb comes loose and slides out of the metal part that's screwed into the brooder lamp. So then you have, at best, two little wires that are holding the bulb back up to the heat lamp screw in, and then of course how long before that actually falls. So be aware of that as well. That has come to play here recently, and I wanted to share that with you regarding that. If the bulb disconnects, you still won't get a fire at the brooder if there's a screen over the brooder and the bulb falls on the screen, not down into the shavings and the chicks. That's a good point, Poet's wife. Also, East Dallas Dave in the chat room states that I can't believe folks would actually also use the heat lamps, the socket made of plastic either. That, yes, is a no-no. We share that when we were on the road. All heat lamps, all brooder lamps are not created equal. And we've said this for years, probably even we were in Dallas several years ago, Dave, when we were doing our presentations there. When you go, and the cheaper ones, they're about $6.95, $7.95, very cheap metal dome for the brooder lamp, and it has a little plastic piece that the bulb screws into, and it has an on-off switch, a little stick that you can turn on and off, and those are horrible. I've seen those melt completely. Even if it says it may be rated for, say, a 250-watt heat lamp bulb, I've seen those melt. So what the lamp, if you have to, we know we're not going to talk everybody into not using a heat lamp. They're $10 for Pete's sakes versus $100. So you know, wasting our breath, it's not going to happen. Even though there's sweeter heaters out there and the Eco Glows from Brinsey. But the issue there is use the ones with the ceramic screw-in base. Okay, no plastic heat lamp connectors with the on-off switch. Okay, you start putting switches in things, and that's going to be another connection that can go bad. The best microphones you can use have no on-off switch on them. Like at church, you know, you have a little choir mic and there's an on-off switch. No. So the best even microphones for sound, bands, rock concerts, whatever, don't have an on-off switch. That's just something else that can go bad, short out, distort sound. Same thing with this. No on-off switch. You plug it in, it turns on. You unplug it, it comes off. And these have the heavier-duty metal shields. They have a ceramic base that you screw the bulb into and one thick wire that you plug in. Plug it in, turns on, plug it off, unplug it, and goes off. So, just be very, very careful. If you're still going to use a heat lamp, whether it be in the brooder this spring or in the coop in the winter, I'm not here to judge you, but please secure those many times. For example, clamp it to the roof truss and then duct tape it to the roof truss and then use a C-clamp or a spring clamp to spring it on the outside of the duct tape and then chain it to the roof as well. So if it's going to fall, everything has to fail at once. The clip to the heat lamp, the duct tape has to all of a sudden just out of the ordinary rip. Then the clamp has to break or come unconnected, and then the chain holding it to the roof also breaks. The chances of that happening are probably zero, but please secure those and have many fail safes if you have to use a $10 heat lamp, and especially if you're going to use it, in my opinion, humbly, that is, in an unnecessary heat lamp in the winter. Okay? So keep that in mind. Wanted to share that with you for our Chickens in the News segment. I've said that till I'm blue in the face over the last decade. But again, there's new chicken folks every year. I get it. You love your chickens. Their name, there's Princess and Petunia and Princess Leia and all that. I get it. You love your chickens and you want them to be warm and toasty at night. You'll sleep better knowing they're warm and toasty at night. You have curtains hanging in front of your nest boxes. You have a chandelier hanging in your coop. I get it. Okay. If you feel like you'll sleep better at night knowing your chickens are toasty warm, though it's biologically not necessary, okay, invest in a sweeter heater, folks, something that's safe. Okay, what's $100 when you're looking at the money you have invested in your coop and your chickens and your feed and your vet and all that kind of stuff? $100, sweeterheater.com. Okay, enough said. Today, of course, is Wednesday, and we've got a great show lined up for you today. It is Garden Wise Living with Arlena today, and we're about to see what kind of wine she's chosen. And we have a special guest. Okay, first, today's topics include small space gardening with roses. Roses aren't my favorite, but small space gardening with roses and clay soil help. And we have a special guest today joining us, Ron Hill. He's the retail manager and landscape specialist with Chambly Rose Nursery in Tyler, Texas. And I'll explain to him why I'm not a big, huge fan of roses. And that's just from bad past experience. So we'll get to that a little bit later. Love them. They're beautiful. They smell nice. But me growing them, not going to happen. So let's get over here to the switchboard, and we will bring on our good friend, Garden Wise Living TV guru herself, Arlena Schultz. Let's give her a big round of applause. Hey, Arlena.
Hey there.
Hey, you know, I'm not a drinker. I don't have my wine, but I do have the next closest thing. I have some grape juice over crushed ice, baby.
Well, it's almost the same. It's just not aged. What's the difference?
There you go. Absolutely.
Well, that's wonderful. Hello,
I thought
everybody.
That would be appropriate for today's show.
That is very appropriate. Grape juice, it's the same. It's just not aged. That's all. No big deal. I know. Well, today I thought, you know, I was talking on Facebook earlier about what kind of wine am I going to test. You know, I talked to Linda Lou Miller, who is a good friend of mine. And she had mentioned that she had recently gone to a wonderful winery outside of Wisconsin here. And she thought, you know, and she was saying that she had just gotten a brand new bottle of wine from there and she was going to test it out. And I said, you know what, I'm going to search through my bottles of wine and see what the heck I can find, because I did receive quite a few for Easter. And so as searching away, I'm thinking, okay, what are we going to sample today? And I actually did come across a bottle of wine from the same vineyard that she just recently went to around in the Mississippi Valley in Alma, back in Alma is where they're at. So it's Danzinger Vineyards. Yes, dear. Danzinger Vineyards. And they are in Alma. And I did get a bottle, and they're in the Mississippi River. Let's put it that way, down by the Mississippi River in Alma, Wisconsin. And they are a wonderful family-owned vineyard. And obviously, Linda Lou Miller went there because she's drinking a white sweet wine, probably as we speak. But I am going to share with you this wonderful, it's called Bluff Top Breeze, and I did get it for Easter. So lucky enough, it's not even open. It wasn't even opened yet. So we have plenty to sample today. So that's what we're going to do. So I'm going to sample my wine. And this is called Bluff Top Breeze. Ooh, yummy. This is a nice, ooh, this is really nice. It's a semi-sweet white wine. It's made with Brianna grapes. It does have a little tropical flavor to it, and it does. They do say that, for instance, the vineyard is recommending a really good pairing with, like, salads. So if you're looking for something that we're trying to get a little bit healthier for spring, yeah, right, and growing our fresh greens now in the garden and in the hoop houses or under the snow, as in our case, then, you know, this is a really good wine for that. And I'm just going to have to one more sip. We're going to cluck and sip right now. Oh, again, this is called Bluff Top Breeze. Ooh, yummy. This is really nice. From Danzinger Vineyards in Alma, Wisconsin. So for you out there that are having a little glass of wine with me, yeah, it's very good. And taxes are done. Yes! Other than all the extensions that we filed in the office, we're pretty basically done with taxes, so I'm really happy for that because I do leave tomorrow. Again, I thought I'd be on tour. For some reason, last show I said, well, I'll be on, but I'm on tour. I don't leave actually until tomorrow. And my next tour of the Magical Miniature Garden Tour takes me to Ohio. Ohio on the 19th, 20th, and 21st. I'll be at Oak Park Garden Center on the 19th. And that's in Swanton, Ohio. I'll be at Wolf Blooms and Berries in Bowling Green, Ohio, on Saturday the 20th. And then on Sunday, April 21st, I'll be at Hone's Garden House and Garden Center in Holland, Ohio. So I'm excited to see Ohio. I have never, ever seen Ohio, so I'm really excited about this leg of my tour, which is continuous. So, yeah, exciting.
I was going to say, I pulled something up for you. I saw it, and it reminded me of you being the tax lady that you are. And I pulled it up. I said, I have to save this. She's coming on Wednesday, and this is a little snippet I found. And it says, up until 1913, Americans kept all of their earnings. Despite this, we still had schools, colleges, roads, vast railroads, streets, subways, the Army, Navy, and the Marine Corps, who managed to win 8 wars. Tell me again why we the people need to be extorted.
Yes, dear. I'm going to absolutely claim no comment on this one. Because I have a lot to comment about. Because I really dislike talking taxes only because it just gets me a little fired up from what I see in the office. But yes. yeah. Exactly. I'm just going to say exactly. I mean, we could probably should have done a freaking tax show last week or week. What I mean? That would have been a really good show.
We had to write off all those expenses we have for our chickens and our goats and our cows.
Right?
our tractor and our garden.
It's cost
our garden.
Season for,
well, you know, if you exactly. You know, we need to start doing a little bit more barter, in my opinion. That is still legal tender. You know, we can barter. Barter system is still legal. So, I mean, we need to start doing that, you know, and we even actually talked about that in the tax office. It's just when they start hauling the cows through the front door, it was a little difficult for other people to sit down. So, you know, that was that didn't last very long. Cookies, chocolate, wine, you know, we work real well. I always said cookies, chocolate, wine, or cake. And Lori, one of the main, the owner basically of the office, she'd say, tequila. I'm like, this does not sound good, Lori. You can't say tequila when somebody's sitting in front of you getting their taxes done. Tequila. Yep. We did have WEAU TV 13 come in last week into the office after my appearance on there. I got to talking to the gals in the studio about the taking somebody's Social Security number and, you know, identity theft. And so they did send down a camera person and talk to Lori in the office about the identity theft problems that are occurring throughout the United States. And basically, IRS says it is not illegal, it's misuse. So really, there's really nothing you can do about it if somebody decides they want to use your Social Security number. It's just something that's really difficult for you as a taxpayer. You have to jump through the hoops. The other person doesn't have to prove anything. So, you know, if you've already get a letter in the mail, which a lot of us did, or a lot of people did, I didn't. I would pick it Congress if I did, but got a letter stating that we recently received your 2012 tax return and needs more information. But in fact, the taxpayer hadn't even filed yet. Well, then that poor taxpayer has to jump through the hoops to prove that they are who they are to file their own.
I have a solution for that, and my solution for identity theft, you know, I don't have to join any of these,
pay me $19.95 a month and I will protect your identity. In fact, this is my Social Security number right here on the screen, and pay me and I will protect you from identity theft, blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
All you have to do, because nobody wants my identity, nobody wants my Social Security number, and I've come to the conclusion it's a perfect system. Just don't pay your bills, have bad credit, and you don't have to worry about it.
Right. See?
Nobody is stealing my social. Nobody is stealing my identity. They take it into Best Buy, and they won't even give them a 13-inch black and white TV, let alone a 50-inch
right?
plasma. So
right.
So that's the key, folks. Pay none of your bills and have bad credit, and you will be safe from identity theft. I guarantee it right here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And this is not the intent of Arlena Shunt and Garden Wise Living. Comments above are not supported by Arlena Shunt of Garden Wise Living. Disclaimer, disclaimer, disclaimer. Anyway, goodness, drink some more wine. It's tax season's done. We're headed down the road for more wonderful, magical miniature garden tours. And we've got a great guest coming on today who's going to help us solve the problems of clay in our soil, or not solve, but at least help us get through that. He's an expert in these matters, and it's a wonderful, wonderful nursery in Texas, which I cannot believe I didn't visit when I was in Texas on tour. But first of all, as I drink my wonderful wine, we're going to talk a little bit about,
Your guest has called in, by the way. He is on hold.
Well, then why don't we just bring him on? I mean, he is more important than moi. And we're basically talking about small space gardening with roses, and we can get his input on the varieties of roses that would work for a small space rather than a larger space. And then we can also get his intake or take on clay soil and how to help with that. So if we want to just bring him on, I think this is wonderful. I can just basically, I'll introduce him as, you know, Ron Hill. He is with Chamblay Nursery, and I'm really hoping that I am pronouncing that correctly. If I'm not, please slap me across the head, but don't spill my wine.
Down here in the south, we call it Chamblay.
Chamblay. Okay, then we're good. Then I'm good. Ron is a Texas Master Certified Nursery Professional and has worked in the horticulture industry since 1984. beginning with an associate degree in ornamental horticulture from Tyler Junior College. Is it Tyler or Taylor there in the South?
It's Tyler.
Tyler Junior College. His career experience ranges from sales to landscape design, maintenance, and installation. Chambly's customers benefit greatly from Ron's experience and helpful personality. Welcome, Ron, to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer and Arlena Schott with GardenWise Living. How are you?
Pretty good. How y'all doing up there?
I'm good. I love your accent. See, I get to be way up here in the north, which, by the way, is Zone 4-5 in Wisconsin, and it's raining, and more snow on the way, and then you guys get to be down there in all the wonderful sunlight and really starting
80 degrees.
Gardening.
Yeah, we're pushing about mid-upper 80s.
Oh, right. Well, how wonderful is that? How are the roses growing down there?
Doing pretty good. We still have a few cold snaps that came in. In fact, we're supposed to get down to about 36 Saturday morning, but these roses are going to be just fine.
Right, exactly. Because you guys, you're known for breeding roses that are of the highest standard as far as for, you know, pest control, no pests, no diseases, resistant, let's put it this way, resistant to disease, and also for hardiness, correct?
Correct, yeah. The roses that we grow, what you call your own root roses, to where we take cuttings off them, and when you have a plant that's propagated from that method, they tend to be, for the most part, more disease resistant than having, you know, a variety grafted onto another variety.
Sure, then that's what we're looking for. That's exactly what we're looking for. Well, with all the chatter about taking more lawn out, for instance, and being more friendly that way as far as less lawn to water, less lawn to fertilize, less lawn, less chemicals going into absolutely everything, because we all know if you have a large lawn, most people want it beautiful and green. So we're deciding we're going to take out more space, lawn space, let's put it that way, and put in smaller gardens. Is it possible to use roses in those smaller garden spots?
It is very possible to use the roses, you know, in a garden situation, providing that you have at least 6 to 8 hours of sun. Most people think that you have to have all day sun, but in reality, if you have at least 8 hours, in fact, in most conditions, if you have morning sun to where it's afternoon shades, like from 4 o'clock on, you have enough sunlight to grow the roses. They need to have good air circulation. So that's the key, is if you're going to have a spot for them, make sure it's not, you know, next to, you know, the house or and then a big fence next to it. You got to have good air circulation.
Okay, so don't pack them in there tight. Choose
don't pack
varieties,
them in there tight.
Right, yeah, make sure that the air is getting around them. I understand that. Well, sure. Okay. And as far as varieties that you would recommend, if I were, do you recommend more of the drift rows or the knockouts, or do you like the heavier duty, or like the David Austin roses?
Be honest with you, like I say, it really depends on the situation and how much space I'm dealing with, but for the most part, I am a big fan of the knockouts and drift roses, even though I've had some people say it doesn't look like a real rose. But it blooms very well, and they have very good disease resistance. Not to say that any rose can have a problem, just that some is better than others on coming back from a problem. But the drift roses are one of my personal favorites, and there's about 6 different varieties, good color like peach and pink, and which is more of a hot pink, and apricot, just beautiful blooms on them. But they grow roughly about 1.5 feet tall and average about two and a half, 3 feet wide.
Oh, sure. So that's where you want to really pay attention. If, for instance, I'm planting in a, you know, took out a bunch of lawn, and I'm going to say I'm putting in a rose garden, but I want to understand the variety of rose and how it grows, correct? How tall and how wide it grows.
Correct. I mean, obviously, like the knockout rose, which, you know, a lot of people tend to use, a lot of landscapers will use. Down here in the south, I've seen it get about 6 to 7 feet tall, but then up north, it'd probably be around 4 feet tall. So depending on where you live, depends on how much it's going to grow. When we have a longer growing season like we do down here, they're going to get a lot bigger. So you have to really know, you know, the variety that you're dealing with, how big or what's a manageable height to keep them at.
Oh, wonderful. Right. So there's where our independent garden centers come in, correct?
Correct.
Because they're working hard to know their product and get it to us, not just hired for the week. They're there for the long term. That's how I look at it. And now, if I wanted, for instance, I don't just want one variety. Could I mix these, or is there a rule that I cannot mix roses?
You can mix roses. When some people, they say, I want to do a rose garden, and they want to do different varieties. They want one of this, one of those, and all that. The main thing is that if you're going to do that, make sure that you have good spacing for them. So, because most roses are going to get about, you know, average about 4 to 5 foot tall and about 4 to 5 foot wide. And then generally I tell people to space them about 5 foot apart. You don't want to jam them up. But
no,
you got to have good air circulation.
Oh, nice. And then I'd like to see them each, because it's not just going to be a solid wall like a landscape wall. Otherwise, I would use a shrub rose. If I'm putting in a landscape or a rose garden, I'm thinking probably, right, that they are actually wanting to see each rose and how it works and how it blooms and structure of it, correct?
Right. They want to, like I said, they want to see the more or less the individuality of that plant. Plus, you need to have some room to get in there and work with it, because obviously some of those varieties have pretty good thorns on them. So you want to make sure you get in there and work with them without hurting yourself too much about it.
Sure. Tell me a little bit about Dr. Griffith Buck roses.
Dr. Griffith Buck was a rose hybridizer from Iowa State University, and he did his research from basically 1954 through 83, if my memory is correct. And he developed roughly 100 different variety of roses. He wanted roses that will obviously be very winter hardy, because with winters up there getting pretty cold, because a lot of times you have to dig them up, cut them back, and then bury them, and then replant them again each year. He wanted roses that can sustain the cold weather and try to get as much disease resistance as possible up there. So he grew some very good varieties.
Oh, I see. That's wonderful. I am looking at your website, and it's just absolutely amazing, and it's full of amazing information on roses. I myself am in love with roses, and I'm planning on putting in a really nice big rose garden on GardenWise Living this year. Chicken Whisperer there, I think Andy said he has an issue with roses, but we don't have to listen to him because it's Arlena's show today. So he can just sit back and play in the chat room, but it's not. You know, we don't say that we don't like roses, do we?
No, but I imagine...
personal. It's just personal. Let me tell you, I've had horrors trying to grow roses. Oh, you got to have all this sun. The issue here is the reason why they rub me the wrong way is that my mother-in-law, regarding roses, she has this amazingly shady lot. I mean, completely full of pine trees. And she just goes out and no green thumb, no nothing. Probably digs this... horrid hole, not twice as big, twice as deep, extra soil conditioner. Just, you know, digs a hole, plops them in there. Oh, I'm going to plant them. I said, Evelyn, don't waste your money. They're never going to grow. You don't have enough sun. You have, like, full shade. They're along a fence. They're right next to the cars. All this stuff. And my wife always reminds me when we pull into her driveway that, ooh, look at those pretty roses over there that you said would never grow. And so her roses, I don't know what it is, because it's probably farthest from a green thumb than anybody on the planet, and probably totally counteracts any recommendation of any rose plant on the planet, because I just don't like them. And so it's personal. It's not that I have anything personally against the roses. It's just personal experience that really rubs me the wrong way with roses, and that's just one of the many experiences. So roses are great. Roses are great on Valentine's Day. Just ask Jen.
You don't get a comment on this point. This is our
gig. Okay, that's fine. Go ahead.
My gig.
Go ahead.
Ron, tell me a little bit about for instance, small space gardening for roses, and I took out a lawn, it's been in for years, what am I going to have to add to that amendment, to amend the soil to make sure or to help my new rose bed that I've just put into an area that has been in lawn for all this time?
Generally, when you have clay, tight soil, some areas around the United States, and of course, or probably around here in Texas, we have a product called Expanded Shell, which is a porous rock material. allows water and air circulation, but is rigid to where the soil's not going to collapse on you. And generally, we like to put about a 3-inch layer of the expanded shell and slowly till that in about roughly about 8 inches deep. And that's going to naturally open up that clay and keep it open.
Expanded shell?
Yeah, S-H-A-L-E.
Oh, fine.
And then you put your organic matter in, 3 inches of compost. Down here we use cotton burr compost, basically the cotton gin trash that's been fully decomposed, and we work 3 inches of that in after we do the shell, and then you're done. You don't have to worry about prepping the landscape bed again.
Nice. So you're basically loosening that up, loosen that clay up, get it to where the water will work through it. So you don't have a compact like a cement. So I know you guys really suffer with that. Texas, Georgia, those areas there. Here in Wisconsin, we have maybe little snippets of clay running through. Mostly it's that heavy black loam or a little sand, but not too much clay. But I have been asked many, many times what to do about clay soil, and that's really good information because I know that we've discussed it before here on Backyard Poultry of clay soil. Poet's Wife says in the chat room here, we have a lively chat room going on. Poet's Wife says we have clay and rocks, bright orange and red rocks, like round fossils and a few goodies. So, like you say, get some organic matter in there, right? And it's shale.
It's expanded shale, and there's good nutrients in that clay. You just can't get to it. And so by using that product, that's going to help you open it up. But see, other areas where if you cannot find the expanded shell, generally I recommend using 3 inches of shredded hardwood mulch, but working that into the clay with 3 inches of compost, working all that in about 8 to 12 inches deep, because you need something coarse texture trying to get something openings in that clay. And then you want to put about 3-inch layer of mulch on top.
And then work that in. Wow. Huh. Nice.
But having that 3-inch layer on top as a top dressing will help hold that moisture in, less evaporation, and keeps the bed cooler in the south, but also insulates during the wintertime.
Very nice. Thank you. That's great information. Did we all get all that? And I know you do. I think on your website, do you have a spot on there that has that kind of a recipe there?
That's kind of recipe that, my recipe, basically. But people, anytime when they call me at the nursery, because I get other people from the United States to give me a call. I mean, even if they have a question, about what to use on the roses, but especially the soil prep, which is, to me, the most important thing to do, we need to make sure we know what you have originally, what's your base soil, and then I'll help you show what to work in to make it better for you.
Nice. Now, Lynette Damiano, I'm sorry if I pronounced that incorrectly in the chat room. She has really sandy soil, she says. So what would he do for really sandy soil?
When you have soil that's really easy to dig into, where if it's sandy or sandy loam, working in about 3 or 4 inches of compost and just working that in about 8 to 12 inches deep, then you're good to go.
Yeah.
You'll never have to prep the bed again. If you decide they want to say, okay, like with him, I don't want roses here anymore, then I want to plant something else, they don't have to worry about prepping the bed again, because once it's prepped, you're done.
You're done. Good. So here up north, I don't know if you want to comment about us folks up here in the north fir country. We're at zone 4-5. Winter protection? What do you talk about when your clients call you for winter protection?
Well, the most important thing I try to get them to do is make sure whatever variety of roses they're going to use will work in their zone. So when you're having, like your David Austin roses, your knockouts, drift roses, those are zone 4 and 5. And really the main thing is if they keep about 3 inches of mulch on top, and make sure the soil is moist before we get a real hard freeze. That's what's going to help protect the roses more than anything. Plus, the main thing is that up there, the last pruning that you're going to do on your roses is probably going to be up in the Wisconsin area, probably maybe around September. And so you don't want to trim anything more after that, because if you trim further down and we have the hard temperatures, it can freeze those canes or stems down further to where you there is a chance you might lose them. So, but leaving some on there, length as they say, that's going to help insulate the rose from any further damage.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you very much for that information. Now, I see you have miniature roses, and since I am on a miniature garden workshop tour across the United States teaching miniature gardening, what about miniature roses? We see them offered at Valentine's Day in the grocery store. Wrong,
no.
In my opinion. No. Tell me about your miniature roses.
The miniature roses that we have, and, of course, we grow several varieties like Beauty Secret, Cupcake. We have one that's what they call a micro miniature called Cinderella that only grows about a foot tall and a foot wide. And it's no thorns on that one in particular. And, of course, the most popular ones that we sell is Rainbow's End. It's kind of a yellowish-orange blended color. It blooms very well. But again, the drift roses is what's most popular and most people are using, again, even for those smaller gardens, because they get they're a cross between miniature roses and ground cover roses.
Well, sure. So for miniature gardens, they work perfect.
Very well. Question in the chat room. Another question. How far prior to the first hard freeze should we prune?
Generally, most roses, when they trim them back, late winter, they need to trim about half, but no more than two-thirds. But generally, it's about half.
Okay, there we go. That's wife, about half. Well, that's wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah, this is some great information. Now, we're all ready to plant roses. You guys have been shipping, I see. You're shipping all the time right now.
Yes, we do our shipping from mid-September through mid-May, and then summertime, because it's so hot down here in Texas, that we stop our shipping until later on in the fall. But, yeah, we ship one-gallon containers to the lower 48 states.
Wow. And then as far as to get them, access them up here in Wisconsin, I would just look for retailers that carry your roses?
Not really sure if there's nurseries up there that carry it, but a lot of times people just, you know, get on our website or they call us here directly at the nursery. And then, again, we try to get the varieties that will be perfect for their zone area more than anything, and we'll ship them up there.
Nice. Okay, I'll have to look for that. Well, thank you for all the wonderful information. If there was anything else we left out as far as what you would do to help people with their clay soil, but it sounds to me like you gave us a really nice recipe, so that might help a lot, not just for roses but for gardens in general. And so that's great. Thank you. What about a raised garden bed? Is it possible to actually grow and winter over roses in raised garden beds or containers?
Containers I probably wouldn't recommend up north because the roots are going to freeze in the container. And so even if you had a zone 4 plant, you're going to lose your wood hardiness in the container. So I always recommend those being in the ground, where if it's a raised bed or regular soil level, keep them in the ground.
Keep them in the ground, right.
Keep them in the ground. And the one thing to remember about with the clay soil, because when it rains or when you water it, it's going to hold a lot of moisture in that soil. So watch the frequency on the watering, because most people tend to water more often and end up damaging the roots because they keep it too wet. So that's one thing about clay soils, is it does not drain as well. You got to watch your frequency on the watering more than anything.
Right. Okay. Well, wonderful information. It's been great having you on as a guest.
I've enjoyed it.
Full of information, and we will definitely check out your website and all your beautiful pictures and information. It's full of amazing information on how to keep our roses survived, whether it's in small space gardens or in full space gardens. So thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate it very much, y'all.
Thank you.
Yes,
have a
thank
wonderful
you.
Day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All righty, great information there. We appreciate him coming on. Super information. Always great to have the experts on in their field. And the rose expert came on and shared his knowledge about awesome roses. And I love to see roses. Don't get me wrong. They are beautiful and very aromatic, but it's just, you know, those little personal life things that just kind of jab you in the side when I'm like, they're not going to grow, Evelyn. You have a fully shaded lot under tons of trees, and, you know, she's digging a hole probably with a little hand trowel for this big 3-gallon rose, and she just kind of sets it in there probably half sideways and, you know,
right,
just,
right.
It'll be fine. And then all of a sudden, every time.
And they're beautiful.
Full shade, horrible soil, along a fence, and it's just, I just like, argh.
Ha ha. I have to say, ha ha.
That's pretty much what she says, too.
I bet. Well, that was wonderful. Yes, I have been noticing, like Annie Haven, they do Rose Chat. It's Blog Talk Radio, Rose Chat. And I noticed they had on Chambolet Rose guest last week talking about, you know, about the information on their thing, about different roses, let's put it that way. But they had Mark Chambolet on. And I thought, you know what, we really need to get some information from the specialists. So it's really nice to have the specialists on while I drink my wine. See, they can talk and I can just drink my wine. Ah, yummy. But we can still chat about what we need to talk about, and that is what's going on in the garden right now. And you guys, I am sure, are doing lots of things ourselves here in Wisconsin, Zone 4-5. We are watered out. We have rain, and more rain, and more snow on the way, 6 to 8 more inches. We had 6 to 8 inches of snow 2 days, 3 days ago, with a whole, then the next whole day, it rained all day long. So I have a little bit of water in my basement. And then now it was a sunny, beautiful day yesterday in the 50s. Melted all that snow and ran. I have a river running right by my backyard. My chickens think that it's wonderful. They've got their little hammocks out there and their little bottles of wine. They think this is a wonderful, but they don't understand today. Now we're back to the 40s and some snow on the way. So, jeez. But that's
hey,
okay.
Man, I tell you, we got corn coming through the fields here all around in South Georgia, and the corn is already up through the ground. It is awesome for the big commercial farmers and the large farms. I have been on the road. I still have my potatoes that are doing awesome, and my onions are also doing awesome in the ground that I planted way back in February. And so their little potato and onion patch is doing great. I'm refraining from putting in my garden, which I could have put it in about 3 weeks ago, until we get back from this trip. So probably the first week of May, which is really about a month late, according to the local folks. But we have such a long garden growing season, it's not a big deal. We're always planting early, so this will be the first time we really planted late. I'm anxious to see how we like it better or don't like it as much. But we are going to, of course, be putting in corn, snap beans, and the bush bean variety, not pole beans, but corn and the bush beans, and I'm doing purple hole peas this year, along with the zipper peas and butter beans. We'll, of course, do our just a few peppers. I like to add peppers to a few things, like meatloaf, spaghetti. So a few green and red peppers. None of the hot variety peppers, though. I couldn't handle that. They just don't agree with me. And then, of course, okra. And I said tomatoes. And there was a couple of... Oh, squash. Our squash last year did awesome. And we may do a couple of things of... we may do maybe 10 plants of pumpkin and maybe 10 plants of watermelon. We haven't had success with any of those yet. But I want to do the moon and stars variety, heirloom variety of watermelons this year. I hope I'll have luck with those. And there may be something I'm forgetting. And that sounds like a lot. We have about an acre that we can till, but we're not going that big because we're moving the coops down to that so-called garden area and fencing off some area for some upcoming goats. So it won't be as big as years past, but plenty for us, fill one of our chest freezers up this year and still have plenty to give away and maybe even sell at a local market. So, but that's kind of what we're doing when we get back. I'll be harrowing and planting
the first weekend, or maybe the first weekend in May. Is that Mother's Day? Is Mother's Day the first weekend in May or the second weekend in May? Something like that. Anyway, that'll be good. That'll be a good Mother's Day gift for Jen, to get her out in the garden and plant some peas and some corn and hoe the garden. Happy Mother's Day, Jen.
Exactly. Yes, it's going to be a great. I will actually have mine in late again this year as well, because I am heading to California, Annie Haven.
Yeah.
Will be open again for me, and I leave on the 28th of May, and I won't be back until probably around the 7th or 8th of June, which is fine for me, because usually I try to get everything absolutely in the ground by the end of May, first week in June. So it'll be touch and go, but it'll be just fine for me. I've done it in the past.
Are you flying or driving?
I am flying out. I will fly out to Nevada where I start my tour. Actually, I will fly straight to Annie Haven's first. I'm going to do the tour backwards this year in California, out west, and I'm going to drive from California to Annie Haven's there on the least lowest tip next to the border there of Mexico, and drive up the coast all the way up to, and then end up in Reno, Nevada, or Fallon, Nevada, where my son lives, and I speak in Nevada 3 or 4 times. So I will be on the road again in May and June, and so May, and then first week in June, and then back home to get the garden in, and that will be good timing to get the garden in. So my husband's really going to be happy about taking care of cows and chickens and little chickens and the brooder.
When are you going to be out there visiting the poo lady?
The poo lady, Annie Haven. I'm going to the Annie Haven Manure Tea. I will be out at Annie Haven's around the 28th, 29th, somewhere in there, because I am speaking again at several garden centers that I spoke at last year, Bushnell Gardens. Also, I will be at Orange at Dragonfly Hollow, Orange County. And so, yeah, the Moo Poo Lady, yes.
Well,
I love
her
Moo Poo Tea.
Do me a favor, if it pans out, we'd love to have y'all on again. It was such a hoot to have y'all on. So even if it's not your assigned day, if I have to move somebody around or something like that, shoot me over a Facebook message or email and let me know when you're going to be there. Somewhere around the noontime hour, and I'd love to have you, Annie, on again, and that would be super, super fun.
Yes, we will. Definitely make a plan of it. We definitely will. Absolutely. Hey, I've got a new variety. I've got a new variety spotlight. I do.
A wine?
No wine. No. We already talked about my. We talked about my wine. This is not a new variety. This is Bluff Top Breeze. Yes, and it's not a new wine from Danzer Winery. But this is. This is my new variety spotlight, and I thought I'd do that every show now, is spotlight a variety. But this is a flower variety. Don't get excited. It's not a vegetable variety, but we do have to cover some flowers on here, too. This is it's called Hip Hop Viola. Hip Hop Viola from Hort Couture. And Hort Couture is one of the fastest growing brands of plants out there. It's a wonderful man named Jim Monroe from Virginia. And he has come up with this wonderful, beautiful new variety of Viola. It looks like Johnny Jump Ups, but instead of the purple and the yellow, it is hot pink with yellow splashes. And it is just absolutely beautiful. I do believe I shared it on Facebook as a new variety from Hort Couture, but it's called Hip Hop Viola. So that's my new variety spotlight today. So that's good, yeah. But we're ready to garden here, and my critters are all saying, what in the heck? The robins are here, which is crazy because they usually come back before now, but they didn't even get back here until, I don't know, April, the first, like, end of March. First week in April, and they're usually here way in the beginning of March. But they have to be snowed on at least 3 to 4 times, all old wives' tales say, before we get spring, and they've been snowed on twice. So one more time is it. And our geese are back. They come back every single spring, and so that's good that we see them out there. And she's starting to make her nest, And she always gets snowed on a couple times. So this is the second time that she'll get snowed on tomorrow when we get our snow. So, okay, that's enough. Enough snow.
Exactly.
We're good. But they say it took us over the hump. We have no drought conditions at all. The soils, the farmers are real excited about the moisture in the ground and ready to get growing. That's what everybody is. So.
Cool, awesome. Hey.
Well, only because it'll recede. It's kind of like the rest of the violas, like Johnny Jump Ups. They will recede and come back, but they are not as far as winter hardy, as far as the roots will not stay. No. But beautiful. What were you going to ask?
I was going to say, hold that thought. We were going to go to commercial break, and we will return. We're talking with Arlena Schott, Garden Wise Living TV, and Garden Wise Living with Arlena here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. So stay with us. There's more great gardening advice coming up very, very soon. So stay with us.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com.
Bye.
Alright, that one was just for you, Arlena, just for you.
Gosh, that's wonderful. I mean, it's not Christmas here.
You're like, don't do me any more favors, why don't you? Oh, Macy. Yeah, we're getting ready to put in our big spring and summer garden here, and definitely looking forward to that. As soon as we get back from our little road trip, it'll be time to fire up the tractor and the harrow and the cultivator and get out there and get it in the ground. So we're definitely looking forward to it. And hopefully we'll be blessed with a beautiful garden that we can fill the freezer with this year. So at least we hope so. Just hopefully the nut grass and some of the other weeds won't be so, because we don't use any type of herbicides or anything like that. So hopefully we can maintain that and keep control over it. I'm thinking I'm going to try to put the rows, space the rows appropriately where I can just run down, up until they get so high, certain plants get certain high, that I can just run down the rows with the tractor with the cultivator on it and not have to worry about, you know, firing up the old Troy-built tiller and that type of thing, or hoeing up close. I can just drive down the rows in the tractor up until they get so tall, maybe 18 inches tall or so, and then it's a little too tall for the tractor. So, but yeah, the nut grass drives us crazy.
Yeah, that is one of the toughest things about being sustainable and organic and natural and all the above words that mean good for you. It's tough because it takes a lot more work. Yes, it does. I agree, it does. And we have to be honest about it. We can't just say, oh, yes, well, I want to be all natural. We do have to understand that it does take a little more work, a little more time, and staying on top of it all, because if it gets away, then it's more difficult. And again, there are lots of ways to do it. Newspaper, straw, like you say, putting the rows apart so that you can get down it with a tractor versus having to till and till and till and till until you're purple in the face and you don't want to do it any longer, you know, and then you just, and then it gets to be more of a nuisance rather than the fun project, and we like everybody to enjoy gardening as much as possible. My son-in-law is they have the CSA and it's all natural, and sometimes it just gets away. But he's, you know, he is a carpet layer, so he uses a lot of that down the rows, and that works really well and doesn't look so sweet and special, but it does do the job. And then, of course, there's row covers or, you know, weed barrier fabric that you can roll down and roll back up. And yeah.
Yeah, somebody was telling me, my neighbor was telling me, there's a beautiful garden in the town over Ellaville, and it's an older gentleman that has it, and he says his garden every year is just absolutely amazingly beautiful. And he always wanted to know how, and then finally this year I think he saw him putting down the weed fabric, kind of like you see they do with strawberry plants, strawberry farms, where they, and they've got, I'm telling you, it's amazing how they can do it, not by hand, he may do it by hand, but over the strawberry farm, and they're setting up, it's amazing. They got, you know, this big $30,000 tractor and this big piece of machinery, and all they have to do is crank her up and lower the device down and start heading their rows, and it basically puts down that tarp, covers it back up along the sides. I mean, it's amazing the equipment they have and what it'll do this day and age for farming. But I've considered that, but you know, as much as we've talked about it on the show, I have the 1 acre, I try to watch the big farmers and see, okay, well, I don't see anybody in Nebraska growing 4,000 acres of corn with weed cloth. I mean, I want to be big farmer, tractor, and 1,000 acres. And, you know, so I try to see when they're harrowing, when they're planting, when they're harvesting, things like that, and follow them since they're abundant around here. And I'm like, raised beds? We don't need no stinking raised beds. You know,
big farmer, big tractor, you know, raised beds, kapooey.
Yeah.
So, I try to mimic that in my own little way, I guess, to try to say, hey, that's not farming. And so when I'm out there hoeing and weeding and running the tiller down, I'm like, man, maybe I should get some of this weed cloth, but then it's not really suitable for using a tractor either. I'd pull it all up. So it's, if I had a small little backyard garden, I could see definitely taking the time to do that. The time to put that weed cloth down would by far be greater than the time it would take in a hot sun of weeding and hoeing and all that kind of stuff. So, and drip lines too. I'm a fan of those, but at the same time, I got irrigation out there, but it's more of a broadcast head, 100-foot, irrigation versus the drip line. But I could, using a tractor, it's just you're limited on some of the things that you can do that would be more small scale. I'm kind of in between.
Yeah.
I'm a little too big to do drip lines or fabric, but I'm not big enough to have a 10-row planter on the back of my John Deere with the GPS on it. So
no. You're kind of like in between with a hard, you're in between. You've got a hard, what is that, rock and a hard spot there? Because, and it's the same thing here as far as my my son-in-law and my daughter, Ashley. They kind of have that same mentality. My son-in-law has the same mentality because, my kids were all raised on 100-acre farms. I mean, hundreds.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And so, you've got big tractors, you've got workers hoeing weeds all day long and lines of people heading down the fields of 20 acres of tomatoes and 50 acres of cantaloupes and 5 acres of beans and, so, yeah, it's a great mentality. It's great if you if you want to do that. But most of us, I've even had to bring back mine. I mean, I had 4 acres of garden when I first started in Wisconsin, and then I've had to bring it back to an acre, and now I'm even half that again, and had to understand that it's me and myself and my husband at home, and so I got to smaller down or bring down the scale a bit. But my sister, my daughter, Ashley and Jason, they have got 4 acres, and they are surely thinking, and he loves his tractor. Don't get me wrong, he's like you. Okay, let's go on a tractor. He wants this big farming atmosphere, which is wonderful. It does work well. But it comes a point in the process of the plants being too big to get the tractor in. Now we've got to think about the 42-foot tall weeds that are around the plants. Now what do we do now? So I've said to them, and I'm going to say to you, is invest in fabric. I am sorry. It's good DeWitt weed barrier fabric, commercial fabric. And you can do it in sections. Do your garden. Break it up in sections where you can, okay, I'm going to leave this spot so I can play with it in with the tractor. But then over here, the smaller things that get all choked out, like my cucumbers, my beans, by the weeds if I don't stay on it, leave the corn for your tractor and your melons. But as far as the littler things, the weed barrier fabric, in my opinion, works really well, only for the pure fact you lay it out. You can cut the holes, plant your plants or your seeds, and at the end of the season, roll it up and leave it at the end. Put a big board in it and roll it back. You're going to have a few weeds in it. Who cares? Whatever. And leave it. Then you can get in your tractor, and you can go back and play in your field and get it all filled up and ready for next year in your with your tractor. So I'm not saying you can never, never use your tractors again. I'm just saying use it, roll it out yourself. Do what the strawberry planter guys do, but do it in a smaller scale and by hand. Roll it out, do your rows, and roll out the stuff, cut your holes, plant. I mean, it's for them, they are going to have to do something like that. It's so time-consuming trying to keep up on the weeds that it's just very cost-prohibitive. It's
They down here they still harvest the watermelons. I guess you have to by hand, and the vehicle of choice is an old school bus with the roof cut off. They'll take an old school bus that the county's retired, and they'll right behind the cab where the driver sits. So cut it, and then cut it straight back so there's no roof. Take all the seats out, and they'll have a few folks standing in the back of the school bus. They'll have a folks down on the ground. They'll cut that stem, heave it up, cut that stem, heave it up, and then set them in those school buses, and then take them back to be boxed up and ship all over the country. So who'd have thought an old school bus with the roof cut off would be the vehicle of choice when it comes to harvesting watermelons?
Watermelon. It was kind of like we have a out west. My son's still out there with that part of the family. But back in that other part of my life, melon farming, Carnegie cantaloupes, we had a melon picker, and that was a huge two-story metal contraption that was pulled behind a tractor. It's kind of a flat on the bottom and had posts with a second story up top. And it had a conveyor, a little small conveyor that ran along the side of it. And you'd have pickers picking by hand and putting them on the conveyor, and then pickers standing inside that big wagon. And so it's basically, it probably looks kind of like the same thing, other than the fact it's probably not a yellow school bus, but probably pretty close to the same.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Love big melons. Oh, gosh.
Hey, man, down south, we grow the melons big down here, and they are, everybody down here loves big melons, so enough said about that. Cantaloupe, yep, and holy cow, let me tell you, you can go down here to the Cordele Farmers Market, State Farmers Market, and you can get cantaloupes for about 50 to 70 cents a piece, watermelons anywhere about $1.25 right off the farm, still got dirt on them, harvested that morning, and then you go down here to Publix, and they're $7.99. It's a shame.
Sure.
So, gotta love it. So, yeah, down in the South, we call them lopes. Hey, you got any lopes?
Got any lopes.
Oh, man. Thanks, Poet's Wife, for sharing that in the chat room. So, hey, Arlene, it's great to have you on. And, again, seriously, get with me after hours and let me know. I think you're scheduled to be back on May 1st, which is a Wednesday, and so, but I'm willing, like I said, if you're going to be near the Poop Lady, and Annie loves it when I call her that, if you're going to be down there with the Poop Lady, then I can rearrange this, that, or the other with Peter Brown or whoever, so definitely ALBC, so let me know if y'all are going to be together during broadcast time any day, and we will definitely have you guys on, because that's always a hoot and always fun.
Always fun. Always a fun. Yeah. I will definitely. I'll keep in touch. I'm headed down the road to Ohio tomorrow.
Ohio.
So I'll be down the road. Yeah.
Well, be safe, be careful, and have a great time. Meet lots of great of your fans, and power to the poultry to you. Drive safe, and again, keep in communication, because we'd love to have you and the Poop Lady on in a couple of weeks.
We will. We absolutely will. Sounds good.
Awesome.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much, and have a wonderful day. And don't forget to garden wise.
Garden wise. Thank you, Arlena. Take care. Always a pleasure to have you on. All righty. And, of course, she's going to go finish that bottle of wine. I'm sure of it. And then she's going to have a wonderful afternoon after she does it. I'm a little crazy today because I had my second little glass of grape juice, so getting a little tipsy. Oh, my. But, yeah, I got to go finish turning the camper over and getting it ready. We're heading out tomorrow after the show. Don't forget, tomorrow we're going to welcome poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, Ph.D. And tomorrow's topic, of course, is going to be nutritional problems in chickens. Nutritional problems in chickens. That'll be tomorrow with poultry scientist and professor Dr. McRae. Right after that show, we are hitting the road, heading over towards Huntsville. Is it Huntsville? Alabama? No, I don't think so. Maybe it is. And hanging out there on our way down to Mobile for our big event this Saturday. So looking forward to that. On the road again. So thank you very much for staying with us today. We love you all, and we hope you'll tune in tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. God bless everybody. Ha ha.